on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YokeCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up? How you doing? Welcome back. It's another edition of the YokeCast podcast, our final episode of the season. Things are really wrapping up here. We are at the, middle to later portion of May. Memorial Day is quickly approaching, and that usually signals the end of the YokeCast podcast for the season. We'll take a little time off here during the summer, and then the goal is to be back probably either late August or early September, most likely late August, because football gets going, and we'll be in volleyball. We'll have soccer underway at that point, so we'll probably be back in late August to get the podcast back rolling for another season, and always exciting. We'll see what we can bring to the table, what we can talk about coming up next year. Obviously, we're hoping to continue to build off the volleyball season. Football had a really good year. Women's basketball won 23 games. They'll be under a new head coach this year, a couple of new assistants for men's basketball going into the season. There were some, obviously, some conference championships, all that excitement. So a lot of good stuff happening at the University of South Dakota, and we're excited to continue to watch this thing build and be a part of it as we move forward into next year. So this will be the final episode of the season, and we'll take a little time off, and then we'll be back at it next year, and we'll see what we can bring you for conversations with student athletes, coaches, administrators, and so much more. It's all a big part of obviously what we're trying to do and what we try to do for you, connecting you to the student athletes at the University of South Dakota. Why not end it with a really good one? And that's what we felt like we're doing this week. I was able to catch up with head coach Carrie Amy, who was obviously introduced as the 12th head women's basketball coach at the University of South Dakota. She is very, very excited to be a part of the University of South Dakota. We sat down to talk about her career so far and what ultimately built that career and led it to the University of South Dakota. Coach, welcome to the University of South Dakota. Congratulations on this opportunity. Describe the last couple of weeks for you.
Well, it's been a little bit wild. It's an opportunity that I wasn't expecting. This opportunity was just open a couple of years ago, and typically you think about it in kind of 4 or 5 year cycles, and so it wasn't something I was expecting to happen. But when I saw the job become available, it was definitely something in the back of my mind that I was hoping I would have an opportunity to be in the mix, to be the next head coach here.
You've kind of just been on this climb and trajectory in college coaching, and last season, your first year at the Division I level at the University of Idaho, what did you learn with that opportunity as you've continued this climb?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's been interesting is each job that I've had, starting NAIA, where you kind of only have yourself and maybe another part-time assistant, to now being in a position, even last year at Idaho, where I had a 6-person staff. I think that was one of the biggest adjustments for me was really kind of understanding how do you manage such a large staff, and how do you utilize each of them to the best of your ability and the best of their ability, right? And be able to maximize just the talent on your staff. And so honestly, that was probably one of the biggest adjustments last year was being able to have so much help and learning to delegate even more than I already had been doing. And I think the basketball part, the coaching part is what it is, and I didn't see a huge change in that way. It was more of just managing and delegating and working with such larger staff kind of outside of your program, just within the athletic department, so many more people to help your program be in a great spot.
Was that a difficult adjustment for you to delegate so much? Because if you think about it, I mean, anybody who's been around NAIA programs, and this is not a knock on NAIA programs, but your staff is very, very limited. You do a lot of things, and as you move up, your staff gets bigger. It's not that you're doing less, you just do different things. Was that hard to kind of hand things off?
Well, you know, I think it's kind of been a gradual process for me. Starting NAIA, yeah, like I said, you know, you have yourself and maybe a part-time assistant, and then kind of into my second and third year, I had one full-time assistant, which was really helpful. But, you know, you're doing, like you said, everything. You're sweeping the floor, you're driving the vans, you're scheduling a JV and a varsity schedule, you're, you know, managing a budget that's super small and trying to figure out how you're going to make that work. I also was teaching classes. I was advising students. So it was a lot going on in the NAIA. And then, you know, you go to Division II, and I had two full-time staff members with me, which was a blessing. Not all Division IIs have that, you know, have that size of a staff. So, you know, I learned a lot there about delegating, you know, and had great staff members there, and were able to build a lot of continuity with our staff, but really learned to delegate a little bit there, and then yes, at Idaho, on a whole nother level, you know, and really having to figure out what each staff member was really good at, and you know, I've always been a believer in hire great people. Let them work, and you know, really empower them to do what they do, and you know, it worked out well for us.
Everyone wants to win, whether you're a coach, you're a student athlete. Obviously, fans want teams to win, and you've been different places, and you've won everywhere that you have gone. What do you do that has led you to so much success?
Well, honestly, I think it started way back in high school, when I was fortunate to be at Sandy Creek, part of a dynasty, you know, winning 10 out of 12 state championships or something crazy like that. You know, but what that did for me was it taught me at a really young age what it looks like to be a part of a winning program, you know, and what it takes to be a part of a winning program. And really, when I was in high school, they had already won a couple, you know, championships. And so there was already this expectation, you know, that's what we do. And so you learned at a young age kind of how to manage that pressure, so to speak. And really, it's an internal pressure, you know, to make sure that you are doing everything that you can do to put your team in a position to be successful, you know. And so I think that's really where my appetite for winning, you know, was ignited. And then, you know, from there, I feel like that's just been so helpful for me in being able to understand what it looks like, how you get there. And you know, even in college, you know, I remember the first season, my freshman year, I believe we lost 10 or 11 games and, you know, had a 20 plus win season. And I remember having a conversation with my head coach saying, like, hey, this isn't acceptable. You know, we're just not where we need to be. And, you know, so it's just been part of me. And again, really, really fortunate to be a part of programs where we've been able to have success, been at places where, you know, we have the right people in place that are hungry to be successful and are willing to do what it takes.
I'm glad you brought up Sandy Creek, because that's where I was going to go with this thing, because that is incredible. Did you even lose a game in high school?
You know, that's what's crazy is we won four state championships, you know, and it was one of those things where Russ Neinmeyer did a phenomenal job of building just a great environment. You know, it was a great environment because he demanded a lot from us, and there was an expectation, right, that we were going to be successful, but he also made it a ton of fun, you know. And I always think people are better at things when they're passionate about them, you know. So he taught me that you, if you're going to be really good, you also have to really enjoy it, you know. So just being fortunate also to be, you know, at Sandy Creek, we had a lot of really talented high school athletes, which in a small town, mm-hmm. sometimes that's not always the case. But names like last names like Shaw and Herbeck and, you know, Leposky and those sorts of names where they had multiple kids and they were all really good athletes. And, you know, we all kind of, you know, were in this environment where that's what we do. We win, you know, and we compete hard and we give great effort every day. And I would not give that back for anything. I was at the right place at the right time with the right people. And I think that has a huge impact on where I am at today.
Well, our fans will certainly remember the name Michaela Shaw, who played at Omaha and had a great career, certainly for them. You went from winning high school state championships to a couple of college national championships at Hastings. What was the college experience like for you?
Well, the thing that was really great about my college experience is, Tony Hobson was the head coach there for me. He actually didn't recruit me, but he became a co-head coach with Ken Rodas my first season, and then for the rest of the time, it was Tony. And again, really, really good coach, and a really, really great understanding by him to know what it took to be able to be successful. And one of the coolest things for me about college was a lot of the players that I played with were within an hour of Hastings. So we had played against each other in high school. As I always say that it's funny because the players that I didn't like the most coming into college became my best friends, and we were in each other's weddings. And that's just how it works out. But there was a ton of talent in that area at that time, and for me it was really cool because I was able to have the opportunity to play with one of my high school teammates, Elizabeth Herbeck, who was the national player of the year. She had the same mindset as me. We came from the same high school program. And so just a lot of great players who had also the same expectation of winning. And we were fortunate to win two national championships. My sophomore, junior season, we won two national championships. Then my senior year, we got beat in the Final Four by a really, really good Cedarville team. Morningside went on to win that national championship. But, my college experience was incredible. We'd go up to the Corn Palace, and they'd have packed the Corn Palace night. And, the fans there were super passionate. And we played against really good players with family legacies. Randy Morgan, was a phenomenal player. I think she might have actually been a player of the year, a national player of the year as well. But, the whole GPAC was just loaded with talent and, great environments, great support. I remember a couple games we played against Concordia where it was sellout, standing only, standing room only crowds, had to shut the doors, no one else could get in type of environments. And, I think if you are able and fortunate enough to have an experience like that as a college basketball player, those are memories that you're going to have for the rest of your life. And people ask me all the time about my college experience, and I just say, I would not trade that for anything. Those people, the relationships are really what lasts forever. My teammates from college are literally my best friends. We're in each other's weddings. We know each other's kids. We get together every year. When we can, we have group text messages. Those are my people. And, I think, college athletics, that's really what it's about.
You talk about the GPAC, you played in it, you coached in it, and I think the conference was formed in like 99, 2000, somewhere in there, and women's basketball won the national title like something like 9 of the first 10 years it was even a conference together. Like, that is crazy.
Yeah, I remember there were actually a couple of times in my college career where the entire Final Four was was GPAC teams. You know, we had to beat Concordia in the Final Four, and we had to beat Dakota Westland to win the national championship, you know, and it became, you know, a theme, a common theme where, you know, in years where there weren't two or three teams in the national championship in from the GPAC, you know, everybody was kind of wondering what was wrong, you know. So any even this year, I believe Dort won the national championship. And so, you know, GPAC teams are still winning and still really, really successful on the national level.
Did you always think about getting into coaching? Was it something that happened during college? When did that start for you that you're like, yeah, this seems like a great lifestyle for me?
What's interesting about that is I didn't actually think I was going to be a coach, but everybody around me assumed that I would be a coach. So it was my senior year of college, and I had never considered, you know, getting into college coaching. And Tony Hobson, my coach at the time, had just lost his assistant. She was getting out of coaching and moving on to something else. And he just, you know, in passing one day said, "Hey, you know, would you be interested in being my assistant for next year?" And I looked at him and said, "Absolutely not." Like, it was just not part of anything I had considered. My undergrad degree was in psychology and health promotion management. I assumed I would go into something in kind of that area, but I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And so, you know, I thought about it for a while and kind of went back and forth. And finally, you know, I decided, okay, I'll do this for one season while I'm kind of trying to figure my life out. And then I'll go from there. You know, here I am literally 20 seasons later and still in college coaching. And what I discovered really quickly in that first year, maybe within the first 3 months, was I was using my psychology and my health promotion management degree and the things that I learned every single day in coaching. You know, it was kind of all of the things I was really passionate about kind of wrapped up in one job. And really, you know, it doesn't get much better than that. So now I sit here and I you know, can't believe that I get paid to coach, you know, the game that I love.
Yeah, no question. Well, you had assistant coaching stops at Hastings and then Fort Hays State, and eventually 2012, you get an opportunity, a head coach at Hastings College, and your alma mater, right? It's close to where you grew up. I mean, not far away. What do you remember about that moment, your first big opportunity to be a head coach right there at a place you call home?
For sure. You know, Jerry Schmutty was the athletic director at the time, and he at Hastings, and he had previously been at Morningside, and he was a winner, you know, and I don't even know if I was ready for that opportunity in a lot of ways. I think he and everyone in the Hastings area believed in me more than I maybe believed in myself. You know, I don't know if you're ever ready for your first head coaching job. You know, you think you are when you're an assistant, and then you get in that position and you realize that it's just a different weight. You know, every decision is a little bit heavier. You know, you're just responsible for every aspect of the program. You're responsible for the lives of the young women on the team in a different kind of way. And so I think one of the other things that made that situation a little bit more challenging for me was it was my alma mater. And we were really, really successful when I played there. And I felt like it was my responsibility to get that program back to the place where it belonged. And so I took a lot of pride in that, and I put a lot of pressure on myself, you know, to try to get that flip back and try to get to that place where we were walking into gyms and people were worried about us rather than us being worried about who we were playing. And so, you know, it was an incredible opportunity for me. You know, I think, you know, getting your first head coaching position is not easy, because a lot of times the response when you try to apply for positions like that is, well, you haven't been a head coach, right? So you really just need one AD, right, to believe in you. And it happened to be Jerry Schmutty at my alma mater. And, you know, he had been a coach. He was a former coach. And so he really was a mentor for me. And, you know, he would kind of help me manage that stress and that pressure that I was putting on myself to try to get that program where I thought it should be. And And so I'm super grateful to him for the opportunity and then also the wisdom that he provided. You know, you don't always have that open door to someone who was a former coach and had a lot of success and wanted to spend time helping me learn and grow and get better.
How much did that opportunity and that moment for you shape maybe your mindset today as you give young people an opportunity to break into the coaching world, somebody to believe in them?
Yeah, I mean, I think I talk about that a lot with coaches who are aspiring to be, you know, either a player that's aspiring to be a coach or a coach, an assistant coach, right, that's aspiring to be a head coach. Is just, you know, you got to kind of find a way to prepare yourself as best as possible. You know, one of the things that I think I often give advice to younger coaches is, you know, I just observed a lot. You know, while I was working for Tony, I worked for him for eight seasons, four at Hastings College and then four at Fort Hays State. And, you know, I observed a lot. I asked a lot of questions. I, you know, didn't necessarily know that I was preparing myself, but, you know, sometimes you have to kind of process your way through. Well, if I was the head coach, what would I do there? You know? And so, I think sometimes people wait for the opportunity and then they try to get ready. And really, it should be the other way around. You get ready every day in what you're doing, in the way that you're working, and the way that you're observing and asking questions of your head coach, so that when you have that opportunity, you know, you're ready. And I don't know that you're ever fully ready, like I said before, but you know, I definitely think that you can put yourself in a position to be more ready than you would be if you just wait.
You took over a UNK team and you were right around 500 your first few years, and then the winning really started in national tournament appearances, your last three there with the Lopers. Why was UNK an important stop in your journey?
UNK was an interesting opportunity for me. It was just down the road from Hastings, and at the time they had really struggled for several years. But at the same time, I knew they could be successful because Amy Stevens was there for several years and really dominated. The difference was, though, she was in the RMAC, and in Nebraska Kearney had made a transition to the MIAA, so completely different conference. You know, I was a little bit hesitant. Lots of people told me, hey, don't look at that opportunity. I just don't know that they can be successful in the MIAA. And so really what made me want to take that opportunity was the athletic director. Paul Plinsky was there at the time, and you know, he and I just really connected. You know, he was a relentless worker. He had a vision. He was moving the athletic department in that direction, and he just made me, just like a coach, you know, that's recruiting an athlete, he made me want to work for him and be at Kearney. And so, you know, I took that job knowing it was going to be a challenge, knowing it was going to maybe be, you know, several years before we could get the thing flipped. But like I said, he really convinced me that it was going to be a place that we could be successful. And, you know, that opportunity was extremely important for me because that the MIAA was just loaded with really, really good players and really good coaches. Some of the best coaches I've coached against were in the MIAA. You know, guys like Tony Hobson, who's won, you know, 700-800 games. You know, Dave Slifer and McHenry down at Washburn, who's a legendary coach. You know, those guys had probably at the time forgotten more about basketball than I knew. And I was still a really young coach. And so coaching against those kind of coaches game in and game out and having to find a way to get players who could compete at that level against their players, you know, that was extremely important for me. I felt like, especially early on in that part of my career, I felt like I was way out of my league, you know, but just kind of kept plugging away, trying to learn lessons throughout the course of my time there. And I feel like I just kind of, you know, continued to get better and better in understanding what was going to be necessary to be able to win in that league in particular. I think that was a huge lesson for me. And then also just kind of learning from those coaches, you know, like the situational decisions and several failures, really, throughout my time there that I felt like, you know, I could have put our team in a better position to win that game, you know. And I think as coaches, we have to constantly evaluate, you know, whether or not we're doing the best job we can do and finding ways to continue to improve and get better. And that's what the MIAA did for me. I'm a way better coach now than I was before I coached in the MIAA.
One of my favorite things to ask a student athlete turned coach is, you've had experience coaching. What's something you've learned as a coach that you wish you would have appreciated more as a student athlete?
Well, I think just how much, you know, time and effort coaches spend thinking about, you know, their athletes and thinking about how to help them and how to put them in situations where they can be successful. You know, the relationship piece for me has always been really, really important. And sometimes I don't think players, when they're in it, really realize the amount of time and effort and attention that coaches really actually give to their players. If we're not with them, we're thinking about them, you know. And so I think players who've gone on and you know, become graduate assistants for me or for someone else, that's something they say to me all the time is, I had no idea how much time you guys spend doing this, you know. So I think that's probably the biggest thing.
Your husband, Devin, he's been on your staff, and that works for you guys. And some people say, how in the world does that work?
Well, I think in the coaching world, it's this is such a lifestyle more so than it is a job, right? And so for us, it works so well because we're able to work together on something towards a common goal, and we're both really, really passionate about what we do. You know, I think our first year of coaching together was our first year of marriage. So that was a learning curve for sure.
Quite the honeymoon.
For sure, yeah. But I think over the course of the last, you know, 8 years, we've just done such a better job each and every year of really knowing each other, knowing each other's strengths. I think one of the reasons why it works is, you know, as a head coach, you're always looking for staff members who can kind of be strengths in the areas where maybe you're not as good, or that's considered to be a weakness for you. And so, you know, I think Devin is exactly that for me. You know, he's really good at some of the things that maybe I'm not as strong in, and I'm really good at the things he's not. And so, you know, we make a great team. You know, we kind of fill in the gaps for each other in some ways. And again, the other thing is you always want staff members who you can trust and who you know are like all in on building the program. And you know, I have that for sure with him in wanting and doing what it takes, you know, to build a successful program.
You know, a lot of men, when they get asked to do something, they say, got to check with the boss. And they're talking about the wife. He literally has to ask the boss, does Devin get to make any decisions?
That's so funny that you bring that up, because lots of people say that, and it might be true. You know, he's been a good sport about, you know, letting me make a lot of the decisions.
Sure. Just a couple more things. You've called this a dream job publicly. Why?
Well, I mean, for a lot of reasons. Like we talked about, you know, earlier in this podcast, I've been a part of winning programs and passionate fan bases for a lot of my life, and USD is those things. You know, this is a fan base. This is a program, one that's been successful. The fan base has been passionate. They're supportive. They care. You know, that's what I'm used to. And that's a place in an environment where I've thrived for my whole life. You know, in addition, this is recruiting base wise. This region has been where we've been recruiting our entire lives. You know, so we have deep connections here. We have a huge network, you know, with high school coaches and club coaches. And, you know, this is our area when it comes to recruiting. And we're super familiar with it. And I think that's advantageous, for us. And then finally, you know, it's a few hours from home.
Yep.
And, you know, people in Vermilion remind me of people from my hometown. And they're people I can relate to. You know, Midwest people are different. And, you know, it's an environment and a community where, you know, people matter. And you feel like you can be connected to people. And people help people. And, you know, I've already felt that just in the first few days that I've been here. And every time I've been to Vermilion, it's been a good feel for me. And you know, for all of those reasons, you know, it's a dream job.
You've been asked, I'm sure, 1,000 times, why South Dakota? Why is South Dakota right for you? What I want to know is, why is Carrie Amy right for South Dakota?
For sure. You know, I think some of the reasons why I just said, you know, I'm someone who's watched this program for a very long time. You know, I've observed, you know, back Coach Lavin and Ryan Williams and Amy Williams and Don Plitzwhite. You know, I've been around for kind of all of those transitions, and maybe from afar, you know, from Nebraska or maybe down when I was in Fort Hayes. But I've always watched, you know, this program, and I've always had a great respect for this program. And you know, I think so many people have told me that it matters here, that whoever is the head coach really cares and values and understands the importance of the program here. And, you know, I, like I said, I've had a ton of respect for this program for a really long time. I'm going to work really, really hard to keep building on the success that all of those coaches have contributed to. We're going to continue to recruit, you know, high character student athletes who are hardworking, who kind of embody the same values and the same character of the people. You know, the alums, the community members here, the fans, the donors. You know, I think I get all of that. I understand it, and I care. And yeah, like I said, I'm gonna work my tail off to make this program continue to be a nationally recognized brand.
Last thing for you, win or lose, when fans leave the Sanford Coyote Sports Center, what are some characteristics that you hope they see in a Carrie Amy coached basketball team?
Effort, you know, that we play really hard, that we are well prepared, that we are tough and gritty and competitive. And also, though, that we have a team that really cares about each other. And we have a team that plays with some joy and plays as a team, because I think that inspires people. You know, people want to be a part of something bigger than themselves, and I hope they see that in how our teams play, that it's inspired basketball, you know, and it inspires people around us, you know, fans that come to our games to also want to be great.
Well, we're excited to have you here and excited to see what next season brings and the future of Coyote Women's Basketball program is as well. Carrie, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Very grateful that you gave us some time and excited to have you here.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
That is Carrie Amy. She is the new head women's basketball coach at the University of South Dakota. And again, she's super excited to be here. And I'm fired up for her. She's someone who really wanted this job. And anytime somebody really, really wants to be a part of what you got going on, I think it's a really, really good setup. So I'm excited for Coach Amy. I'm excited to see what she can do at USD and what she can bring us here for Coyote Athletics. A lot of meet and greets coming up next week for Coach Amy. If you haven't been able to meet her or talk to her yet, there will be some meet and greets next week around South Dakota. There is one scheduled for on May 22nd. There's one scheduled in Yankton. Later that day, it'll be in Sioux Falls. May 23rd, they'll have stops in Huron and in Rapid City as well. So check all that out. The details are available at goyotes.com. Meet and greets coming up next week with Carrie Amy, the new head women's basketball coach at the University of South Dakota. All right, that is going to pretty much wrap things up for us this week. Not much going on in Coyote Athletics. There'll be some track stuff going on here over the next few weeks. They'll have the West Preliminary. They will have the Nationals. Hopefully we'll have some athletes make it to the national meet and all of that good stuff. But outside of that, things have pretty much wrapped up at USD, and we'll see how the offseason can build, and hopefully a lot of excitement coming up next week in Coyote Athletics. All right, that's it for me. Thank you so much for listening all year long. Your listeners, the number of times you listen means the world to me and to us. It allows us to keep doing this thing and keep trying to build what we got going on here with the Yotecast podcast. So thank you so much for listening each and every week, and hopefully we can continue to build it up going into next year. I'm John Thayer. Have yourself a great weekend. Have yourself a great summer. As always, stay safe. And go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.